Now, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. This was after his brothers had sold him because of their jealousy and the problems they had with him. He was taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, brought him up from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. And the Lord was with Joseph so that he became a successful man. Interesting. You don't normally think about someone who's sold into slavery being a successful man. But God blessed him there and he became successful. And you'll see a little later, which we're not going to cover today, but later on he ended up in prison and he was very successful in prison. So a little different, but you can see this and you see where Joseph ended up, and God used the house of Potiphar and then the prison as sort of a training ground for the skills that he was going to need later on. But he also obviously had a gift at leadership and organization, administration, which he used very effectively later. He was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant. So he got a promotion. He was a slave, but he got promoted to the personal assistant position, which was the highest you could go from there. And said he made him an overseer over all his house, put him in charge of everything he owned. So he was trustworthy. Came about that from the time he made him overseer in his house and over all that he owned, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. So the Lord's blessing was upon all he owned, his house and the field. So he left Joseph in charge of everything that he owned. With him there, he did not concern himself with anything except the food that he ate. What a guy Joseph was. But he had a little problem. Turns out, it says, now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. So he was a young, good-looking guy. And it came about after these events that his master's wife had her eyes on Joseph. And she said, sleep with me. That would have been tempting. I got to thinking about this. Potiphar was a very powerful man in all of Egypt. Chances are his wife was a beautiful woman. Just saying. And would have been very tempting, I'm sure, for Joseph, who was young and handsome. It's interesting, though, his response. He said, look, with me here, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. He has put me in charge of all that he owns. There is no one greater in his house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. And then he closed it with this statement, how could I do this great evil and sin against God? And I love that he closed it the way he did, because he recognized that not only would it be a sin against his master, but most importantly, it was a sin against God. So he refused. There's a purpose for the fear of God. Moses said to his people, don't be afraid, for God has come in order to test you and in order that the fear of him may remain in you so that you will not sin. So that you will not sin. Now, where did he give? This was Exodus 20, verse 20. This was when he was making his proposal to the children of Israel of the 10 statements, or we refer to them as the 10 commandments. And the first one, of course, says, you shall love the Lord your God with your heart, your soul, and your mind. And I'm going to add this. I believe that the pathway to loving God is to first fear him. If you don't fear him, you will tend to be nonchalant in your obedience. But if you fear God, really fear him, you'll do what he says. And you will grow in love for him as you do that. Now, Jacob, you know, you got Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are the three that are considered the fathers of Israel. Jacob, it's interesting. Whenever Jacob was born, Jacob and Esau, he was one of twins. And Esau was born first, and then Jacob. And God declared at that time, he said, the younger will serve the elder. The elder will serve the younger. So God had declared at birth that Jacob was going to be the one that the blessing was on, that the primary blessing. And not that he was excluding Esau, but the primary, the one that God has chosen to work to is going to be Jacob, the younger. It was interesting, though, Jacob and his mother, Rachel, were both very cunning. And they used their cunning to achieve whatever ends they thought was necessary. And so later on in his life, whenever it was time for the blessings to be bestowed on what they thought was Esau, they realized, no, God had declared that the older will serve the younger. So the blessing was from God's was going to be coming to Jacob. But instead of just trusting God to work it out, which he would have, they decided they needed to use their own cunning and their own manipulations to make it happen. So they dressed Jacob in, because the father was blind, or almost blind, made him feel like Esau, and had Rachel made the porridge that Isaac loved that Esau normally made, but they used trickery to get God's will done. So Jacob had an early example and an early history of using his own cunning, and he was a brilliant man, because later on, whenever he went to the land of his father's to get a wife of his own, who would have been Rebekah, he used cunning then to get his way, and he became very wealthy while he was a servant there, wealthier even than Laban, his would have been his uncle, I believe, or no, cousin. Anyway, yeah, you're right, uncle. And so, because a lot of things going on here. You had cousins getting married and stuff like that. And when y'all got a theory about that, I shared this one time. This was years ago. You know, people lived a lot longer then. And my thinking is the bloodlines weren't as messed up as they are now. And so it didn't cause the problems that it can right now. But anyway, there was a lot of that. In fact, even Abraham married his half-sister. So a lot of wacky things going on that we just don't do today. Thank goodness. Even in West Virginia. I mean, that's more a joke than anything else. But anyway, Jacob used his cunning, so the time came when God had to wrestle with him, because whenever he was coming out, he spent 20 years working for Laban, 7 years for Leah, because he thought he was going to get Rachel, and he ended up, I think I'm getting some of my names mixed up. He thought he was getting Rachel, he got Leah, so he said, listen, I'll work 7 more years, but he went ahead and got Rachel then. Then he agreed to a 7 more year period to serve Laban, but it ended up being 6, I believe. So he spent 20 years, and he still had used his cunning instead of trusting God and fearing God. Like I said, he was smart. In his case, I think his intelligence and his wit and his ability to manipulate, that was what he depended on. That was what he was doing to try to get God's will and his own will done. So it ended up God had to wrestle with him when he left that land and started heading back home. And it says that he wrestled with God all night, and finally God touched his hip and he had a limp from then on. But that wasn't all that changed, because it was then that God renamed him to Israel. Jacob used his cunning, but when he became Israel, when God touched him after wrestling with him, he changed. It wasn't until then that he began to fear God and trust God. And I think that was why part of the reason that God changed his name to Israel, because he really had become a different person after wrestling with God. Now, I'm going to shift gear a little bit, because this is about fear of God, not about Joseph and Jacob and all the others. He says, listen, all of you of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem and King Jehoshaphat, this is what the Lord says to you. Do not fear or be dismayed because of this great multitude, for the battle is not yours, but God's. Now, it's interesting to me that there's a phrase here. He says, do not fear. Now, I've been talking about fearing God, but there he says, do not fear. To fear God properly, there are things you aren't to fear. In other words, he says, don't have a fear of man. Don't fear what people can do to you. I would also add, we're in a tumultuous time in America. I'm going to say to you, God's still in charge. And I'm also going to say, God can still intervene in America no matter who gets elected. I say that with confidence, because God's bigger than any party. I'll talk a little bit more about that. But he says, do not fear the things that really can't hurt you. They can cause you trouble. But in the end, as long as we fear God, he gets us through every obstacle. And I can say that in my own life. There have been times I thought, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. And when I would begin to pray to God and he would calm my spirit and calm my heart and begin to remove the fear, then I could see him starting to intervene in ways. And he also went on, he says, because the battle is not yours, but God's. The battle is not yours, but God's. That gives me a lot of comfort. Matter of fact, I think I might have to make me a, that might have to be one of my plaques. I've got a list now I'm making of plaques that I want to make during the 6 weeks that I'm in, that I can't do any lifting after my next surgery, which I haven't scheduled yet. The source of Joseph's power, going back to Joseph, was that he feared God. He feared God from an early age. In fact, it's interesting, if you look back at his life, I believe that he was listening to God and fearing God and speaking to God at a very, very early time in his life. Now, it's interesting, he was one of the latter born sons, so he would have been the one who grew up while his father, after his father began to fear God. The older sons, they grew up with Jacob, a different father. Joseph grew up with Israel, the one who feared God. And I think that may be part of the reason you see a difference in Joseph. But one of the things that I think Israel did wrong was he showed favor to Joseph that he didn't show to the other sons. He put him as one, some of them translated as a multicolored coat. Some talk refer to it as a long coat. From the best I can tell, he dressed Joseph in a coat of royalty. And all the brothers had to wear regular clothes. They got jealous. Very jealous, as a matter of fact. And, you know, when your jealousy does terrible things to us. And you know, if you've had someone that was jealous about you, you'll find that they will try to figure out ways to get to you and overturn what you're doing, make you look bad. And that's what they were doing with Joseph, only their jealousy was so deep, they decided they wanted him dead. And they used the cunning, and this was what they had learned from their father Jacob, was you use your cunning to get your way, as he had done with 20 years with Laban. And so they were following in that same pattern. And the difference, though, they were also heartless, which was not true of Jacob. Jacob still had a heart. And in fact, later on, you see that he felt bad about what he had done to Esau, about taking his birthright and getting the blessing. But they also had no fear of God. Now, it's interesting if you read through this account of Joseph, it's probably, let's see, 39 to 50, it's like 11 chapters or so that are all about the life of Joseph. And it takes from the time he was a boy, he was favored, he was sold into slavery, put into prison, and he was finally raised to be essentially the ruler of the land because Pharaoh told him, says, you're in charge of everything. And the Pharaoh didn't worry about anything because Joseph was so good at administration, he just took care of it all. But now, interspersed in those 11 or so chapters about Joseph, there's this one little section about one of his older brothers. I think he would have been the fourth son, Judah. Interestingly, Judah, the lineage of Judah is where Jesus came from. And so the kings all came from the line of Judah. But Judah was, well, he was cunning too, and he wasn't a really good man. And he married a Canaanite woman who then had three sons. The oldest son was evil, and it says, and God took him. The second son was evil, and the first son actually had married a girl named Tamar. And then she became then the wife of the second son. Then he died. And so then Judah promised her to the last son, and it didn't happen. Now, there's some weird stuff going on culturally here. I don't understand a lot of things about this culture. And so I'd love to hear a little more background itself. But apparently, you know, if one son died, then the next son was supposed to marry his wife, and the first child would become the first son. Child, and then and so, and plus that was how a woman, I don't know, got some kind of status perhaps, because she was the bearer of the offspring of the son and that sort of thing. So anyway, Tamar got forgotten about. In the meantime, Judah's wife died, and he began to have a desire for a woman. And he showed up in this town. Well, Tamar started thinking, you know, that rat, he promised me to his youngest son, and it never happened. So I'm going to trap him. And so she dressed up like a prostitute, enticed him. Then Jacob was with her, and she got pregnant. Well, now Judah found out that she was pregnant. He said, we're going to get rid of her. She's going to be punished for this. And then she said, well, the man I was with is the one who owns these things, because he had left those with her. And then he said, she's more righteous than I am. Now, the reason I bring this out, because that was interesting, because, you know, we had 11 chapters about Joseph. Then stuck in the middle is this little story about Judah and his infidelity. Then the very next chapter, it talks about Joseph not falling into temptation. And I think the reason God inserted that story right there was to sort of illustrate, okay, this was Judah. Judah was the one that the kings are going to come from. This was the one of the sons where a lot of blessings were going to come through, but he wasn't a good man. But Joseph was. So I think part of the reason sometimes we see things in contrast and we see them better. So he was showing a contrast here, I think, showing Judah was normal. He failed in normal ways. Joseph didn't. Why did Joseph not fail? Why, when he was enticed by Potiphar's wife, did Joseph stand strong? Did he not fail? And I think it's because Joseph feared God more than he loved pleasure. And to have a successful walk with God, I believe that's the key. To fear God more than we love pleasure. Because I'm going to be honest with you, there's a lot of times my pleasures have taken me down. And I learned two things. I fear my wife and I fear God. and sometimes in mixed order. Incidentally, this past Friday, we celebrated our 49th wedding anniversary. So I'm excited about that. And love of God begins with the fear of God. I really believe that. And the more I think about it, the more I think. I've never known someone who loved God that didn't also fear Him. I just think that's essential. And I think that's something you almost never hear anymore, is fear God. Other than me, there's been occasionally through the years I've talked about the fear of God. And I have never heard any preacher anywhere ever talk about the fear of God and the need for the fear of God. You know, God loves us and He looks out for us. But He also chastises us. And He corrects us. You know, I grew up in a home where Dad was a good athlete. He was an athlete in high school, and he was good throwing a football. He was good shooting a basketball, and he was quick with a belt. And he was good at it. And I never got more than a couple spankings because I feared it. And I loved him, too. Didn't always agree with him. We had a lot of conflicts, but I feared him. And it translated into me staying out of trouble. I remember, you know, you hear boys talk about getting a spanking in school. You know how many spankings I got in school? Zero. You know why? Because Dad was one of the teachers. And he told me, if you get a spanking in school, I'll find out, and I'll give you another one when you get home. And I believed him, and I feared him. So I didn't do much.
Well, I got all mine for you.
I'm going to talk about politics a little bit. First of all, I'm registered independent, so I don't have a dog in a fight. But same time, I remember in 2011, it was the 2012 Democratic Convention, would have been the second time President Obama was up for election. And I remember watching the Democratic Convention, and one of the speakers mentioned God in his speech. And when he did, I heard this low boo start resonating through the convention and continued. And I thought then, that party's in trouble. If the name of God is mentioned and they boo and there's no correction, I thought they're in trouble. And I've watched the policies of that party go in a direction ever since then that I find very disturbing. And I'll just tell you right now, for me, the big issue is abortion. You know, I'm strongly pro-life, and the reason is because I believe that we were created in the image of God, and that our life begins at conception. And so that for me is, if I look at who I'm going to vote for, that's always the number one thing I look at. Now, before you think I'm endorsing the Republican Party, I remember the words of Chuck Colson, who was the hatchet man for Richard Nixon, and he ended up going to prison and became a Christian while he was in prison. And then he became a very popular speaker in churches and things like that. And I heard and have also read an excerpt from one of his speeches. He said, listen, And it was a warning to Christians. He says, don't put your faith in the Republican Party. He said, because they will use you for your vote and then abandon you if it's to their advantage to gain power. Political parties are there for power. They're not there to look out for you. It's for themselves. So I'm not going to, you know, we're a 501c3, and so I'm not supposed to endorse, but I'm not endorsing. I say this with a clear conscience. I can't endorse a party. In fact, I remember Washington, George Washington. One of his early warnings to this country was be very cautious about developing political parties because they can undo the work we have done quicker than anything. And I see that possibility now. And so I'm concerned about our political situation, but I also remember God's in charge. Nations begin to crumble when they lose their fear of God. Remember that. Go back to the 40s. You know, we were a nation who depended on God. Go back to when the first Bush was in office and we invaded Iraq. Were any of you in churches at that time? All of a sudden, the churches got full because we realized the need for God. In fact, that's the last time I can remember that a national event like that really caused people to turn back to God. I haven't seen it since then. That was in the 90s, I believe, early 90s. So it's been a while. It's been like 30 years. And it seems that the nation as a whole has been sliding into the wrong direction since then. The fear of God. I'm going to close this out by reading from Genesis 50. And it was after Jacob had died, or Israel had died. And Joseph's brothers were concerned because they knew, okay, we were not very good to our brother. We sold him into slavery. Actually had planned to kill him and then changed our mind at the last minute at the encouragement of Judah and also the first brother. Anyway, Joseph's brothers had seen that their father was dead, and they said, what if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong which we did to him? So they acknowledged they had done him wrong. And then they sent instructions to Joseph saying, your father commanded us before he died, saying, this is what you shall say to Joseph. Please forgive, I beg you, the offense of your brothers and their sin, for they did you wrong. And now please forgive the offense of the servants of the God of your father. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. I think he wept because he realized their sincerity. They were sorry. Then his brothers came and fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. But Joseph said to them, do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring about this present result to keep many people alive. So therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. So he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. These brothers who were evil to him, he forgave and comforted and spoke kindly to. But I think the most important thing for me is that he recognized the things that you did. God, you meant it for evil, but God worked it out for good. As it says in Romans 8:28, God causes all things to work together for good to those who love him.